Again, it's good to see you back tonight. Good to see Elbert leading singing again, and I appreciate him doing that and that he has the strength and help to do it, and we're proud of that, Elbert, so much. I don't know of any time that I've seen in my lifetime where things were more uncertain financially than what they are right now. I don't think I've ever seen a time when there was more unemployment than what they are right now. We live in the county of Marion County, Alabama, and there's 12% unemployment. You just switch over to Winston County, and there's 25% unemployment. There's no jobs, and it's just a certain uncertainty in the lives of so many people. We live in a corporate world, an international world, and as a result of that, it's almost impossible for someone to hire into a plant where their father and grandfather worked and work out a career in that. It's just unheard of for that to happen. When I first started preaching, I would talk about four things that were leading to the divorce rate: fornication, drinking, finances, and religion. But I've pretty well narrowed it down now to almost all of these can be summed up in one word, and that is financial problems, because they bring on so many things. There's a lot of folks who claim to be experts, and they don't have the answer to the problems today. I found out what an expert is. The word ex means past, and spurt means a small squirt. So they're just a past squirt, people who claim to know all there is to know. An expert is someone who has a briefcase 50 miles away from home. He's considered an expert. In Luke chapter 14, verse 28 through 30, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, setteth not down first, and counteth the cost, whether he have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he's laid the foundation, not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock, saying, this man began and was not able to finish." Our families need help, especially in the area of finances in this age of recession. We're facing that in our country. 76% of marital problems stem from financial problems. There's a great need for families to be educated on how to handle their money, their finances. The principle that we see in Luke 14, 28 through 30 is planning ahead in the area of finances. I'll offer you five helps for financial planning tonight. These are simple, they're common sense, and you know, I don't see much common sense being used today anywhere in their government or in much of our finances today. Principle number one: spend less than you make. Now, we've had seminars before when I was here at Creekwood. I know you've had one not too long ago on, No Debt, No Sweat seminar. And it's almost impossible to get people to come and listen to these people who have devoted their life to the study of this very subject that we're talking about. They don't want to hear it. Number one, for fear that that person might tell them or their mate, you're going to have to make some changes in your lifestyle. lifestyle, and they don't want to make any changes in their lifestyle. So ignorance is bliss. They don't want to come to hear it discussed. Well, there's a great need today for families to know how to handle their money. Number one, spend less than you make. Now, that doesn't take a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist to see the wisdom in that principle. Spend less than you make. Today, credit cards and other unnecessary expenses help to defeat us. How can one get ahead by abusing credit cards and paying from 18 to 21% interest? How in the name of common sense can you get ahead doing that? Well, you're not using common sense, because you will know that if the outgo, now listen, is more than the income, the upkeep will be your downfall. I told you that over and over and over again when I was preaching for you here at Creekwood, that you cannot spend your way out of debt. Can't do that. So if the outgo, in other words, you spend more than you take in, then to upkeep or have the upkeep of that family is going to be the downfall of that family. Overspending comes from one thing, and that is from a lack of contentment. A lack of contentment. And Paul said in Philippians 4, verse 11, that I do not speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatever state I am therewith to be content. Contentment is a precious virtue, but it's one we have to learn. We have to develop that. It's not something that you're born with. It's not something that Paul, the Holy Spirit, just hit him one day over the head with it. It was something he had to learn. Contentment does not mean that we are to be satisfied with junk. It does not mean that I don't want to better myself. And yet contentment is so foreign to the American way of life. Do you realize we are a spoiled generation of people? Contentment is living within our means and being thankful to God that we have that to live on. I'd rather have a $500 automobile that would get me from point A to point B than to overextend myself and have the best automobile in town that I can't pay for. I'd rather have that cheaper one than the other one. Now, I know of couples that have been married for just a few years, and they have a house and furniture much nicer than it took their mom and dad 40 or 50 years to accumulate. Young couples think that they need to start out where their parents are, if not above that, and it took them 40 years to get to that point. Many of these couples find themselves in financial crisis, and over the years, I've talked to many couples about financial problems. Let me give you one example. I never use examples of those I had when I was in Mobile, Alabama. Won't do that. And I won't never call names. This is somewhere else, not Mobile. I know you would never, ever have anybody in Mobile that would fit into this category that I'm going to mention tonight. They had financial problems, so I told them to bring all of your bills to the office, and they did. And we got in there, and we worked things out, and we had a plan. If they would follow that plan, they could be debt-free in less than 24 months. Well, they left. They were so satisfied with that. And we can pay off all these debts here, major debts, those that kill us. You know, not just a house or something like that, but all those other incidentals that just eats away at us every month. Well, they brought them all in. We worked it out so you could be debt free of these in 24 months. Well, everything went well. The second week, the lady called and canceled out the session. I said, "What's going on?" She said, "We have an opportunity to have a free burglar alarm system put in. Free, don't cost it a penny." I said, "That sounds wonderful." But in the back of my mind, the only free thing that I know of anywhere is cheese at a mousetrap, and it's got a catch to it. There's nothing free in this world. I said, "Well, free, oh yes." "Well, how long did you have to sign your name up on this contract?" She said, 2 years, 24 months. "Well, how much was it per month?" She said, $48 a month. I said, "That's $1,152 you're paying for that free burglar alarm in 2 years. Well, she didn't like to hear that. The third week, she called back and canceled out again. She said, "You know, our anniversary is coming up soon. And my husband was on the internet the other day, and he found out where there was a special offer for a cruise. A great price." I said, "How much was it?" She said, $3,000 apiece. She said, "We're leaving," gave me the date a few weeks out. "Well, how are you going to pay for it?" "Well, we had it put on our" — what? Somebody tell me. "Credit card." "How much interest?" Tell me. 31 now? 21. All right. Then anyway, you know, that couple's headed for financial disaster, and they're not far down the road. Listen to what Ecclesiastes 5:10 says. "He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, or he that loveth abundance with increases and also vanity." In 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 12, Paul, in writing this young man named Timothy, he said, "For godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and certain we can carry nothing out. But having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. And they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and to many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith, pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness. Fight the good fight of faith. Hold on eternal life, whereunto thou art called and hast professed a good profession before many witnesses." One would have to search long and hard to find such a person as Paul described to Timothy. Now, what would it take to make you content? Trip to the beach? Trip to the mountains? Get on a cruise ship? Now, some of you can remember sleeping on a feather mattress under a tin roof, and the rain falling on that. Such a soothing sound. But contentment in Christ Jesus is a choice that we must make. Paul said, "I've learned to be content." If we can control our spending, we can move from financial stress to financial stability to financial strength to financial freedom. But if we don't master the first principle, we'll stay in the debt trap all of our married life. And for many couples that are in that debt trap, that marriage does not last very long. Learn to spend less than you make. Learn contentment. You know, we talked this morning in the Bible class about Proverbs 22, verse 6. There's a lot of great scriptures that get lost in the shadow of these other great scriptures. Train up a child the way he should go, and he's old, he'll not depart from it. You know what verse 7 says? It says that the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is the servant of the lender. How many of us believe that? It's the truth. Second principle, build an emergency fund. That's what I call the uh-oh fund, the rainy day fund. There will always be unexpected expenses coming up, especially when they come in bunches. The refrigerator goes out. That's $1,200 to $1,500. The same time two of your tires blow out. I don't know if that refrigerator and that tire got together and conspired to bring it all at one time. But they always come in bunches. Most of the time, they come in threes. You know, today, appliances are made to last about less than 5 years. And then they're going to go out. Try to get one repaired. Most of the time you can't get them repaired. Better just trade it off and get you another. Now there's some companies that make good things that last a long time. But some just make televisions that last about that long. And then you got to buy another one. You see, we live in a throwaway society, and their companies are catering to that very thing, the uh-oh fund. Financial crises come to everyone at times, bunches up on us. Well, how do we prepare for a rainy day? In Proverbs 13:11, wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. Wealth gained by dishonesty shall diminish, but wealth gained by hard work shall flourish. See, work is good for us. It's good for us. It makes us feel better, increasing our self-respect, especially if you're able to build up a little nest egg, something to fall back upon. Go to now, you that say, today or tomorrow, we'll go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain, whereas you know not what shall be on tomorrow. For what is your life? It's even as a vapor that appeareth for a little time, then it vanisheth away. For we ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. I have a good friend of mine. I went to high school with him. We're the same age. This man has gone through, I know, at least three fortunes. Three. But all during high school, when we were playing football and baseball, he always came to school early. Went to the pool hall. When school was out, he's at the pool hall. He's a good pool shooter. He was good at gambling. And that followed him in his life. And when they put in the casino in Tunica, Mississippi, he began to go there. He came back one day with a $10,000 check. He had his picture in the newspaper. Look what I won, $10,000 at Tunica. You know what's happened to him? He's lost that third fortune now. So his wife, she said, well, I said, how are things? I heard that they had lost their house. I said, how are things with you? She said, well, you know, we're to that age that we're downsizing. We have a mobile home we moved in beside where our daughter lives up in the country. Sad. So sad. Need to set a goal for an emergency fund. You said, how to do that? Set back $10 a week. By the end of the year, you got $520. Set back $20, you've got $1,040. I'm not picking on any particular one tonight, but my dad smoked from the time that he was 9 years old until he was 70 years old. He smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day, none filtered. I've had pneumonia 3 times because I know my lungs have been damaged because of secondhand smoke. I know that. Dad smoked a cigarette. I figured it up, how long they are, how many you smoked in a lifetime, from 9 to 70. He smoked a cigarette that was over 40 miles long. And all that he got him was emphysema and a shorter lifespan. Now, what if Dad had saved all that money? He could have had a nest egg. Add up all the snacks you buy, all the soft drinks you drink, all the junk food, all the money you spend on other habits, and put that into your emergency fund. How much would you have? It's amazing how much money we spend on things that are unhealthy for our bodies. I know a young lady that worked at a clothing store. She was in college. Mom and Dad was furnishing all the money there. She worked in a clothing store. Never brought a dollar back, I don't guess. But she bragged about having 28 pairs of designer jeans. Who's going to wear 28 pairs of designer jeans? You know, people like this, they get married and they continue to spend like that and end up in financial crisis. And listen, parents bail them out time and time again, and it becomes more like an enabler than a true help, and a lot of difference in a handout and a hand up. Thanks to Mike Edelman for telling me that one. A lot of difference in a handout and a hand up. A handout or a hand up. Are you a helper or are you an enabler? Need to ask ourselves. If it'll help our kids to receive a handout, fine. But we need to be taught. Parents, train your children up. They need to be taught to stand on their own 2 feet. Shelby and I know what it's like to practice tough love. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's difficult. But I can tell you from experience, it's profitable. Shelby's nodding her head up and down. It's profitable. Build an emergency fund. Number three, increase your giving. You say, now that sounds just like a preacher. How can I increase my giving when I'm already over my head in debt? Well, see, that's your attitude right there. It may be that I'm not talking about money. It may be that I'm talking about your time. It may be that I am talking about, your influence for God and the work you could do for the Lord. But it might also mean that I'm talking about your money. The way that we can imitate Christ to help other people. There's seven times in the Bible talks about Christ having compassion upon them. Those are listed in your outline. Matthew 9, verse 36, he had compassion upon them because they were sheep without a shepherd. He had compassion, Matthew 14:14, and he healed the sick. He had compassion, Matthew 15:32, and he fed the hungry. He had compassion in Matthew 20:34, and he healed the sight of the blind. And then Luke 7, verse 13, he had compassion on the widow of Nain's son and raised him up and gave him back to her. Mark 1:41, he had compassion on the leper, and notice, he touched him. He touched him, which is unheard of. He had compassion, Mark 9:22, on the epileptic boy. You see, giving begins with an attitude. The widow had only two mites. What was she going to use two half pennies to buy? What would two half pennies buy? One young man was found or caught by his parent throwing his pennies in the garbage. They said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, what will they buy anyway?" The attitude of giving should begin with parents teaching their children how to give, to be good stewards. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6, "But this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap sparingly, he that soweth bountifully shall reap bountifully. Every man according to his purpose in his heart, let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace abound, that you may, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work." Then there's other scriptures. We know them. Malachi 3 and verse number 10. "Will a man rob God? Yet you've robbed me, saith the Lord. Wherein have we robbed thee?" And the answer is in tithes and offerings. "You're cursed with a curse. You've robbed me, even this whole nation." In Luke 6:38, "Give, it shall be given unto thee. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, shall men give into your bosom. For the same measure you meet with, it shall be measured to you again." Listen, giving is an attitude. Give God your money, your time, your talents, your service. And I'm here to tell you, you cannot outgive God. No way. You can't outgive God. Principle number four, establish a spending plan. I don't want to use that B word. It's a dirty, nasty word. Budget. Budget. But a budget is scriptural. It's practical. It's biblical. That's the principle taught in Luke 14, our text. Let's plan ahead before we spend and to build a tower. Going to build a house? How you going to pay for it? Going to buy a car? How you going to pay for it? Establish a spending plan. This biblical. The man who started the Heinz company, that's your pickles and your ketchup. He said the principle upon which he founded his business was God first, others second, and pickles last. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. For those who have uncertainty about what's going on in our financial world today, let me remind you of something that I base my hope and my confidence upon today. Psalm 37:25, the psalmist David said, I was young and now I'm old, yet I've never seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. Number five, finally, get regular checkups. I try to get a regular checkup from my doctor, Dr. John Kerr. Many of you know Dr. Kerr. Get that yearly. I'm due for one. We go get dentist checks out. Checkups, get our teeth cleaned. And we need to ask ourselves financially, how am I doing? Ask yourself that. Lamentation 3:4, let us search and try our ways and turn again unto the Lord. 2 Corinthians 13:5, examine yourself whether you be in the faith. Prove your own self. Know ye not your own self, but Jesus Christ is in you, except ye be reprobate. Know yourself. Stop and examine. Where is our money going? How much do I spend out of my year's salary on interest? See, the devil doesn't like it when we get healthy in any area of our life. And finances is no exception to that. He doesn't want us to be healthy physically. He doesn't want us to be healthy spiritually. And he doesn't want us to be healthy financially. And he's going to do everything he can to wreck all of those. Always be prepared for setbacks, but remember God's faithfulness. Hebrews 13:5, let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have, for he has said, I'll never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Spend less than you make. Build an emergency fund. Increase your giving. Establish a spending plan or a budget. And get regular checkups. I trust that these spiritual principles will help us in our financial health. Now, this has not been a lesson on first principles, but a lesson that is needed nevertheless in our day and age. We want to offer the Lord's invitation tonight. If you've never given your life to the Lord, come tonight in trusting faith, repenting of sins, confessing your faith in the Lord, being baptized, rising to walk in the newness of life. If you have taken these steps already, strayed from your commitment, come back to the Lord, and he'll welcome you with open arms as together we stand as we sing.